This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharitz and Xiaoning. Shares of Tenaga Nasional reached its most oversold level since December prior to the release of the group's first quarter earnings yesterday. Now, Tenaga Nasional reported a lower first quarter net profit of 1.6 billion ringgit, down by 27%. And this was on the back of higher forex translation losses and higher finance costs.
Yeah, the fall in first quarter net profit from a year ago, it was a result of other regulatory adjustment, adjustment to be returned. Now, the following is no longer available in the current year of assessment. We're speaking about impairment for its international investments and also higher tax in the quarter due to reinvestment incentive. We also, however, EBITDA increased by 18% to almost 5 billion ringgit. EBITDA margins of 37% is due to the impact of the Malaysian Financial Reporting Standard, MFRS 16. And we also, we're also seeing revenue rising about 8% to 13 billion ringgit.
Actually, results were above market expectations. Mm. And if we look at the longer term, right, what is Tenaga's focus? Now, their long-term expansion is looking at the international footprint and in particular renewable energy to enhance its non-regulatory income segment. Now, in the short term, they're very much focused on improving costs and operational efficiency, looking at digitalization and automation. But they also, remember, guys, they're going into the broadband business.
That's right.
Which will be another revenue stream.
Yeah, so there's also been news that they're looking to support initiatives to expand their businesses into a more unregulated business sphere, like rooftop solar PV systems and high end, as well as you mentioned, Xiaoning, high speed broadband. They're looking to grow their renewable energy capacity to 1,700 megawatts, both domestically and internationally, by 2025. But TNB's also been in the news for another small faux pas, a little bit of a hiccup. Yes, because specifically negligence and technical faults on the part of Tenaga Nasional, this was among the reasons that electricity bills spiked for certain consumers. So another reason for the spike was that the bills for electricity usage also reflected usage of more than 30 days rather than the standard fixed 30-day billing.
So coming to the rescue is our Minister, Yeo Bee-yin, the Energy and Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change Ministry, who said that TNB must be made accountable for what happened or they risk facing legal action from consumers. Energy Commission had met with TNB over the dissatisfaction amongst consumers in Malacca and other parts of the country. Now, with regards to the smart meter issue, Energy Commission is going to investigate and they are going to find out what went wrong with the implementation of the smart meter.
Yeah, how is TNB currently handling this issue? Apparently, if you have a problem, please complain to them and they will look it up and they will credit any surcharge to the consumer's account in the event of overcharging or when an excess reading has occurred.
Complaint raised about 10 times, about 300 complaints this time around in comparison to a year ago.
Yes, I'm surprised it's only just Malacca because I have heard of stories that people in Kuala Lumpur were also overcharged due to their smart meter.
Yes, you actually have a story about this as well,
yes,
don't you, Xiaoning?
My sister's bill went up to 800 ringgit from a typical 250 ringgit.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
And kudos to TNB. She just made one phone call and they rectified it immediately and credit her back.
Okay.
So mistakes do happen and I'm glad TNB does it quickly, resolve it quickly.
Still, it's not really that great optics. But, another thing that is also falls under the purview of the Ministry of Energy, Science, Technology, Environment and Climate Change is plastics. Now, Minister Yeo Bee-yin has urged developed countries to review their plastic waste and stop shipping garbage out to developing countries. She's insisting that Malaysia is not going to tolerate this and we will actually be sending back plastic scrap imported illegally from several countries, including Singapore and Bangladesh.
And, we're looking at a lot of containers in Westport Klang, which is filled with contaminated and low-quality, non-recyclable plastic waste, which is it, isn't it? I mean, it's not about importing recyclable items, but non-recyclable ones. And these are the ones that is going to cause a lot of contamination. And containers which came from other countries as well, we are looking at rubbish that's found from Australia, the United States, Canada, Saudi Arabia, Japan, China, and Bangladesh. Speaking of China, they no longer receive it. And we're acting upon how they've responded to this.
Yeah, apparently when they went through the rubbish, they found plastic bags coming from places like Marks & Spencer and Tesco in UK. Now, what are the current actions being taken? Now, local importers will be forced to pay for the bill and return these shipments within 14 days. If they fail to do so, the government will invoke the Basel Convention on Control of Transboundary Movement of Hazardous Waste and their disposals. Now, a total of 5 containers have been returned to Spain last month, and a further 450 metric tons of contaminated plastic waste from 10 countries is also expected to be shipped back soon.
Yeah, so since last July, the government has been cracking down on illegal imports of plastic waste, as well as shutting down unlicensed plastic recycling factories. And this is quite a big problem, guys, because I think it was in October last year that news started to come out that we've actually become one of the top destinations for waste from other countries. And there were pictures at the time that surfaced of Pulau Indah, which is an island town.
In Klang.
Yes, in Klang. So it's just about an hour's drive from Kuala Lumpur, and it is filled with garbage. And it's ironic because the name of the island is supposed to be Beautiful Island, and it's definitely not beautiful anymore.
And, you know, we're not the only one. I think there's also Philippine in the picture, and these illegal waste came after when President Rodrigo Duterte government ordered to send about 69 containers of garbage back to Canada. And, you know, they're leaving the garbage within Canadian territorial water if Ottawa refused to accept it. So dispute came about after the action of a Canadian firm, which sent over 100 containers containing unsorted electrical and household garbage back in the year 2013 and 14.
So for us, we took in about 754,000 tons of plastic between January and July last year. That was up from 450,000 tons in 2017. Now, aside from this, in other local news, lawyers for Liberty are calling for police to investigate the death of a 25-year-old man in Sungai Buloh prison after he died of tuberculosis. And they're saying that there was criminal negligence involved in the death of the remand prisoner. The prisoner, M. Prusothaman, complained about a serious fever, stomach ache, and diarrhea, but the prison only gave him Panadol. And he was only diagnosed with TB after he was admitted to the hospital on May 21st, 3 days after his death. So BFM actually spoke to lawyer Melissa Sasidharan from Lawyers for Liberty, and she explained who should be responsible for detecting the first signs of illness in prisoners and the issues faced by those prisons.
The responsibility would first and foremost be with the prison wardens, because they are the ones that come into contact with the prisoners on a daily basis. There are also medical officers stationed at prisons, but the numbers are limited and disproportionate to the total number of prisoners in prison. So Hakam recently stated that a prison with almost 5,000 prisoners only had 2 doctors available. So the issue is more of resources and training so that the prison authorities can take healthcare of prisoners more seriously, because at present it's only in very select and extremely serious circumstances before a prisoner is sent to the hospital, such as the case of Prusothaman, when it is already too late. Otherwise, the medical officer or prison authorities would only provide minimal off-the-counter type medication, which is normally Panadol, as a cure-all for all diseases.
And then she then explained the responsibility of the prisons department for communicating with prisoners' family regarding the state of the inmate.
Unfortunately, in my experience, the prison authorities don't seem to think that they have a responsibility to inform family members in such serious cases when inmates are hospitalized. Of course, this has to change, because prisoners are under state's care, and the families are completely reliant on the state to provide the information. So if you don't inform the families when their loved ones are hospitalized, or when something serious happens, then, you know, surely you don't wait until the prisoner is dead, then only you inform. That cannot be right. And it would honestly be a heartless policy.
She also explained why these cases aren't reported better or more frequently.
In many of these cases, say for foreigners, nobody knows because their family or their next of kin are not known, or they could be less aware of their rights, as typically they come from a poorer background. It is only recently that lockup deaths have come to public consciousness. For example, in the case of Karuna Niti, because in these cases, they died while on remand under police investigation. So for health-related issues, I find that there is a lack of care on the part of the authorities because this is the system and this is the condition that we have. So the attitude seems to be tough luck. And also many of these cases, when it relates to illnesses or health-related issues, the attitude seems to be that it is something not so shocking as brutality inflicted by the authorities.
And that was Melissa Sasidharan, a lawyer with Lawyers for Liberty. Now, just a quick correction. Earlier, we said that the prisoner M. Prusothaman complained about a serious fever, but he was only diagnosed with TB. I believe I said it was he was only diagnosed 3 days after his death. That's not right. He was diagnosed 3 days before his death. But his postmortem actually concluded that he'd contracted the disease several months prior to the diagnosis. So he would have displayed strong symptoms that I guess went unnoticed.
Yes, he would have been actually very, very sick. And it's sad to know that he was only given two Panadols. I don't know. I mean, he may have committed a crime, but it's also our state's duty to look after him.
Definitely. Now, we are coming up on the 8 o'clock news. And after that, Wang Xiaoning, you're going to be speaking to Ian Shapiro, who's the chief executive of Real, a UK social enterprise. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.